Good morning. I'm going to share with you a story about it. And a few people are going to help me tell this story, including a psychologist, a scientist, a civil rights activist, a poet, and a YouTube comedian. There are several derivations of meaning for the word table. To enter into a list, form, or catalog, to provide with food, in a parliamentary sense, to lay on the table for discussion, or the notion to lay aside for future consideration. Who is not at the table? Who is not included, discussed, considered? Who is cut off? Who is invisible? Maslow's hierarchy of needs posits that the most basic fundamental necessity is food, water, and shelter. And I emphatically disagree. The need to belong, to connect, to sit at the table, be included, not cut off, is at the core of who we are as human beings. The need to be invited to the table is at the core of our hidden, invisible hearts, irrespective of which axis of orientation one navigates. The need to belong says, I am you, in silence, thought, and voice. The circuitous path of understanding, I am you, is a fractal image of an inner sky, from dust particles to trees, to a trained eye on how the galaxy frames time. Though the passage of time is not necessarily commensurate with the advancement of equity and harmony. All of the fractal images that surround us are often invisible, not readily available to our psyche, unless we are young. True, sophisticated compassion comes from the hearts and minds of our youth. They have not been carefully taught yet. I have experienced homelessness. I have searched for food, water, and shelter. And while homeless, I broke into buildings, begged on the street, and stole food. But being homeless was nothing compared to the more profound less that I felt, experienced, because I was alone, cut off, a moth crazy around the misconceptions of this invisible it that consumed me. This may seem like a non sequitur, but bear with me. When you hear the name Isaac Newton, what is the first thing you think of, Jennifer?
Gravity.
Yes. But people who lived before Newton, they felt they experienced gravity, even though they lacked the term or concept of it. Around the age of 10 or 11, I started to feel and experience a different type of gravitational pull, though I lacked the term or concept of it. It was this powerful force of nature, commensurate with the force of invisibility. I didn't understand. It was inconceivable to me that there were others who could say, I am you. This invisible it was pervasive in my thoughts, and it continued to lack a term or concept until I went off to college. And in 1984, I discovered the term for it. You ready? Yikes. Now I had the term, but the concept was still invisible. And the term was frightening because I knew it was something that I had to hide, keep invisible. Instead of focusing on my studies, I spent way too much time sneaking around the library looking for it in the books, the text, the words. What is it? Somehow I knew at a core level that if I found it in the books, in the text, in the words, it would comfort me. It would make me visible at the table, belonging to something. Ossie Davis was a remarkable human being. He wore many hats in his life as an actor, director, playwright, educator, civil rights activist. Most importantly, he was a humanitarian. And I was able to watch on a documentary film or listen to Ossie Davis sharing a vignette about his daughter. His daughter, around age 13 or 14, in her French class, had been given an assignment to read a novel in French and then compose an essay about it in French. Well, she chose The Three Musketeers by Alexandre Dumas. So one day, their daughter was running up the walk with her paper high above her head with a big A-plus on it. And Ossie Davis and his wife, Ruby Dee, said to her, "Honey, we are so proud of you, not just because of that A-plus, but because you chose a black author." Now, they thought that their daughter would be happy, but she was not. She said, "Why didn't my teacher tell me? Why wasn't it in the book?" Now, all of this floundering and searching meant that I was not actualizing my potential regarding academics. So I dropped out of school, and I became homeless. And I met my first girlfriend, which was a disaster. Met the first girlfriend and then became homeless. This was in Lewis, Delaware. I escaped homelessness by joining the United States Army. Be all that you can be in the Army. Raise your hand if you remember that commercial. And while filling out exhaustive forms, I checked off no to the question, "Are you a homosexual?" Now, I had participated in ROTC in college, and I knew that if I checked yes, I wouldn't be allowed to serve. So I checked no. I entered as a 98 Gulf, which is a linguist, within the realm of military intelligence, studying the Korean language, Hangul, at the Defense Language Institute Presidio San Francisco, aka the Club Med of the Army. It's beautiful. The unified purpose and sense of belonging was powerful. I was at the table, and I loved every aspect of being a soldier. The mental and physical challenge, esprit de corps, the unified purpose. Now, a top secret security clearance was necessary in order for me to follow orders to report to the DMZ, the demilitarized zone, the border between North and South Korea. And these security clearances are exhaustive. The investors take statements from neighbors, friends, former teachers, church members, ex-girlfriends. So when I was called into the company commander's office and handed a document that was part of my investigation file, I read a testimony that said, "Deborah Fowler is a homosexual." That no that I wrote led to another no in voice and precipitated a subsequent interrogation, lie detector test, which of course I failed. I loved being a soldier, and therefore I did the only thing I could imagine in the moment. And I said, it was only once. It was only once. It was not that pervasive, invisible force of nature. It was not me. This meant that I was then required to provide a detailed written testimony describing the once. In order for an analyst in an adjacent room, whom I never saw, discern the veracity of my claim. The military's analyst discerned from my written statement that the once was a lie. The analyst said who I am, homosexual. So the negotiation between public and private life that I had perpetuated since the age of 10 or 11 now had a name. Fraud. Criminal deception. Deception, fraud. I was dishonorably discharged under fraudulent entry, a criminal offense, cut off, removed from the table. However, I was allowed to graduate with my class, which was only 2 weeks away from this analysis, since it had already been decided that I was the recipient of 2 out of 3 awards granted to a graduating class. One was the Soldier's Award, which states, superior professional conduct, excellence in military bearing and decorum, outstanding, exemplary, representative of the United States Army. Random twists of fate led me to South Korea 13 years later, teaching English as a foreign language, and it was there that I discovered the most glorious sense of belonging in the classroom. I have been teaching English to speakers of other languages, of other languages at Lowell High School for 10 years. That is where I met Carol Allen, and that connection led me here to this privilege to speak with you. At Lowell High School, new immigrants and refugees have come into our classrooms from every corner of the world: Iraq, Nepal, Congo, Honduras, Myanmar, Uganda, India, Cambodia, Brazil, Eritrea, Sudan, Congo, Guinea, Mali, to name a few. And in classroom 107, there was a poem by Rainer Marie Rilke that hung on the wall. Ah, not to be cut off, not from the least partition, shut out from the law of the stars. The inner, what is it, if not intensified sky, hurled through with birds and warm winds of homecoming? Ah, not to be cut off. As Carol knows, the context at Lowell High School is gritty but rich. And my guiding philosophy in the classroom has been to reach a student's spirit first, to bring them all to the table in the unified purpose of moving into visibility and finding their power within the realm of acquiring English in fluency and accuracy. Ah, not to be cut off. At that table of inclusion and consideration and discussion, their shared experiences granted them the opportunity to share their hidden hearts and venture into the vast invisible world that says, I am you, as a universal condition. Their axes of orientations comprise different languages, cultures, belief systems, ethnicities, and the kaleidoscope of private universes were hurled through with intensity. Sitting at the table with our future, with the best of what humanity has to offer, has been a privilege beyond measure. And I understand now that although I did not have the opportunity to serve my country in uniform, I have had the honor of serving my country as a boots on the ground, in the trenches, classroom teacher.
after being out-processed from the army, I carried a deep sense of shame. And this shame pronounced somehow that merely navigating through everyday life meant that I was getting away with something. I was a fraud, believing that I belonged in prison, cut off. The rational part of myself knew that this was ridiculous, but it was real. It was real, this invisible notion that I was wrong, criminal. Because of this, I believed that if my students knew that I am gay, it would somehow undermine our unified purpose, be a distraction, upsetting. I believed that if my students knew this invisible part of me, then I would be compromising our connection at the table. Especially since most of my students are from Native countries that criminalize homosexuality. We had power words that were strung from the lights across the room: perspective, diversity, wisdom, kindness, respect, change. In the center, the fulcrum was truth. My self-censoring and lying was another type of fraud. But this time, I believed that I was practicing it for the sake of a good purpose. I learned quite recently that I was so wrong. I had cut my students off and disrespected their capacity for sophisticated understanding. I had disrespected their need and expectation that I would model integrity and truth. Gerald Unks, he's a professor at Chapel Hill, wrote over 20 years ago, in 1992, the following. Right now, in our public schools, homosexuals do not exist. They are non-persons. They have explored nowhere. They have discovered nothing. They have solved no equations. They have painted nothing. They have written no literature. They have composed no music. They have held no political office nor military rank. The message to all students is abundantly clear. Homosexuals have done nothing of consequence. But the message holds even more power for the homosexual student, and that is, no one who has ever felt as you do has done anything worth mentioning. It is time. We must interrogate and make visible the pathology of our society that is the root cause of and responsible for the perpetuation of the following staggering statistics. Right now, today, 45% of homeless youth identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer. These youth are 30% more likely to drop out of school. They are 30% more likely to counterintuitively become pregnant or impregnate someone before the age of 18. And they are 40% more likely to attempt suicide and engage in risk behaviors. Just as silence can be deafening, so too invisibility can be crushing. The omission of LGBTQ voices in our classrooms is inculcating in the psyche of our youth and all of us the pathology that leaves too many not sitting at the table. Not included, not discussed, not considered, not fed, invisible, not understanding that they are us. Voices that the world should not miss have been cut off, not given a place at the table. Voices that have given much to this world have been silenced. voices that have contributed to the development of our nation and our national and global identity have been erased, invisible. On a light note, August 22nd of this year, that dark cloud of shame and fraud was finally fully and completely lifted because I married the love of my life. Fully legit, all 50 states. And when I met Dee 4.5 years ago, I always get choked up. She came with a beautiful package, not baggage, a package. And that package is two sons, Simon and Eli, who are now 16 and 13. And the youngest, Eli, has a profound appreciation for a British YouTube comedian, Comedy Shorts Gamer. Comedy Shorts Gamer, in his segment, Dumbest Vines Ever, will call the internet for the absurd and hypocritical and provide a brief narration about it, which invariably begins with, "What is that? What is that?" Now, so in our house and in our car and everywhere we go, Eli is sharing these segments, and honestly, it is funny every time. I have heard, "What is that?" so many times that I find when I'm researching and reading and learning and discovering LGBTQ history, which is often absurd and hypocritical, I find myself saying in my head, "What is that? And then I discovered this guy, Friedrich Wilhelm von Steuben. Here's a beautiful statue of him overlooking the parade grounds at Lafayette Park in D.C. And inscribed on this is Father of the American Military, Savior of the Continental Army. Now, George Washington summoned von Steuben from Prussia in order to turn a ragtag group of farmers into a fighting militia. He arrived in these grand red flowing robes, toting his little dog, brandishing a very intimidating sword, and he was successful. And countless historians speculate that if von Steuben's influence had not arrived here, that the result of the war would have been vastly different. Now, the history books state that von Steuben died a bachelor and that his dear friend, William North, was by his side until he took his last breath. Now, we cannot assign today's language to the past. That would be irresponsible and ahistorical. But in von Steuben's own words, written in his own hand, he stated that he was a lover of men. What is that? Talk about gays in the military. The statistics that I provided earlier represent voices that the world needs at the table. Voices that feel cut off, lacking confidence, dropping out, becoming homeless, attempting suicide, not finding their affinity, not becoming great, not contributing, remaining invisible, not seeing who they are in relation to you. LGBTQ people are present in every nation, every belief system, every ethnicity, but where they do not exist is in the discussions and teachings in our K-12 classrooms. Now is the time for honesty and visibility. In conversations, in words, in text, in books, in classrooms, in terms and concepts. What is your it? What have you felt, experienced like a force of nature? What have you kept invisible? Everyone has something to come out about. Everyone has something to share that allows another to hear you say, through your visibility, I am you. Honesty and visibility can expand into those invisible hidden hearts and into the vast invisible world, bringing to the table people that the world needs to discuss, consider, include, bringing to the table people that the world should not miss. Ah, not to be cut